Ever want to take a test, but in space? Sharpen up your number two pencil. Here comes Coming of Age.
Lift the curtain a little higher, number one.
There will be Klingons.
Phaser lock established, Captain.
Let me blow him out of the sky and give him a quick death.
Your favorite captain.
And this time, we really get some Pappy Picard action here. We get old Daddy Picard.
And that out-of-the-box thinker, number one.
You know, I'm going to pull out the whole stepping over the chair thing here.
All this, and somehow more, on episode 18 of STTNG's Not Another Star Trek Podcast, coming at you right about now.
All right, you know what? You know what I feel like doing?
Surprise me!
I feel like counting backwards. It's just something I like to do.
Huh?
Five.
What?
The buildup is killing me, number one.
Three.
Come again?
Two. One. Welcome, everybody, to another exciting episode of your new favorite podcast, STTNG's Not Another Star Trek Podcast.
Oh my god, another one.
They're just breeding like things that breed a lot.
Yeah, I hear all the coolest people are out there making TNG podcasts.
They're all into it. It's a thing. It's a wave. It's on the TikTok. The young people are doing it.
Right.
They're flossing and they're doing TNG podcasts. I am one of two delightful young men involved in this enterprise. I am Admiral Andrew, and accompanying me on this away team is
I'm Commander Dave. Commander Dave E. Dave.
Commander Dave. V. Dave. So your Dave first v. name is D-A-Y, your middle name is Victor, your last name is Dave. I don't know, man.
The V thing reminds me of Deanna Troi's out, the underwear she keeps wearing on the outside.
Of her love belt.
Yeah, it's like she's so busy like feeling emotions around the ship that she puts her underwear on backwards every week. I think that's what's going on.
Yes. Well, this, by the way, is the podcast that's not afraid to wear its underwear on the other side of its pants as we discuss Star Trek: The Next Generation. What are we doing here?
Oh, you're asking me? We go through these episodes, 178 episodes, and we're going through one at a time and doing a rewatch. It started back in 1987, and we've creeped into 1988 already, and we're on episode 19?
19 of the show. This is our 18th episode. It's TNG's 19th episode.
Right.
Don't open this door. Sorry. Do not open the shuttle bay, buddy.
You know what? You know what? I was getting so excited. We'll have to wait till the next episode because I want to jump. I was jumping the gun on both of our favorite song from the 80s, which was 19. So we'll save that for next episode.
No, 19? But you are like a sandy-haired Jake right now. You're just shoving that shuttlecraft straight out into space without asking permission. And it's getting to me.
It's very, a very deep episode. Thank you.
Thank
that
you.
Happens later on, folks.
Do you want to say what the name of the episode is?
It is Coming of Age.
Coming of Age? Really? Is this something that the kids could do? You said the kids to bed?
Well, many of these episodes I've put the kid to bed before.
Yeah, but Coming of Age. I mean, it's you know, does Wesley, you know, beam down a boy, then beam up a man?
I think that was on the Justice episode.
Well, the best part about the Justice episode is that dude can't even get laid on the Justice planet. That's how bad it is.
Poor Wesley. No, this is a Wesley-specific episode. Heavy on the Wes episode.
It's heavy on the Wes. You know, it's so heavy on the Wes, it's making my throat a little dry.
Oh, my God.
Ooh, Perrier. Poppin' cans, number one.
Hold on a second. Yeah. Let me back that up. Jamming on the Wes. Jamming.
Jamming on the Wes.
Popping Perrier. It's my lifeblood.
Okay. Do you want to tell the folks what this episode is about, or you want me to do it?
Hey, this is the episode where the Enterprise D is orbiting Relva 6?
7.
7.
You're one Relva off.
One more rotation. One planet over, dummy. It's time for young Wesley Crusher to take his test to see if he can get into Starfleet Academy.
Finally.
And Wes is competing against three other very promising candidates. Meanwhile, in Story B, the Enterprise crew finds itself subject to a surprise inspection from Starfleet Command under the orders of Picard's old friend, Admiral Quinn.
Oh, ho, ho, Admiral Quinn.
And the Admiral's accompanied by a cocky young officer named
Remick.
Oh, Remick, boo.
What's his first name in it? Yeah, boo, thank you.
Dexter.
Dexter Remick. And he subjects Riker and the rest of the crew to a demanding interrogation, focusing on the fitness of their captain, Jean-Luc Picard.
Bum, 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 bum.
What is the mystery at the heart of this investigation? Do we know? Do we find out? Do we ever know? Will Picard be compelled to leave the Enterprise? Will Wes get lucky? And will he also pass the exam and become Starfleet's newest recruit?
All this on the next Star Trek The Next Generation. All right. Well, thanks everyone for coming.
All right. That's it. You know, this is similar to a lot of the other episodes where they got these kind of competing stories going on. I think this might be one of the first times that they actually kind of both gel. You get a conclusion to both stories.
I was really sort of taken aback at how straightforward that both of these were. And, you know, they both have the common theme of being tested, being put in uncomfortable situations. But they also make, like, total sense. Both right. plots actually make sense. They're grounded in character, and I think this is probably the first successful attempt of the show to actually do some character work.
Right.
And I think they get somewhere.
Yeah, there is a lot of stuff that happens in this episode with the characters, and there's a lot of shifting. It's really finding stronger feet in this episode. I think there's reasons for that in front of the camera and behind.
Ooh. Are we going to take a peek behind the camera?
Lift the curtain a little higher, number one.
Is this going to be the coming of age?
Think about it. So the coming of age title, though, really is specific to Wes. So I don't think that Picard's coming of age at all, is he?
I don't know. I mean, I think that's a good question. Is Picard coming of age? Because we do see some interesting changes in Picard, which we'll get to, but mostly because we've always been annoyed by this. Jean-Luc Picard hates children, so let's stick him on a ship full of children.
Right.
And this time, we really get some Pappy Picard action here. We get old Daddy Picard steps in a couple of times, and he's like the wise father figure.
Yeah, and I think that's cool. And now we've seen little flashes of this along the way, and I think this full episode is like competent, in-command Picard.
Yes, very much so. You know, I was thinking about some of the earlier episodes, the battle, and there's that big concern that Picard is weak. He's very susceptible to pressure.
Right.
You know, he starts getting worked on by the Ferengi, and suddenly he's doubting his sanity. And this is definitely not that Picard. This Picard is being questioned. He's being pressured, and he's like confident. He's fine.
Right. And so Picard's sort of on trial. He's being questioned. And at the same time, in the other story, Wesley's doing the same thing. Wesley goes to, you know, Starfleet.
It's like Starbase matte painting is what it
right.
is. It's Starbase. We did our best to make this look three-dimensional.
I've said this before. I love those cheesy ass sets. Anytime they get off the Enterprise, and the Enterprise is a terrific set. When you're on the Enterprise, in those scenes, you're looking at the best part of the show. It's almost all the time. So when you get down to a planet, then, you know, it's kind of nice to see a change of scenery. But this one had one of those sets, and then there's windows, and then you can see like the external matte painting that you're talking about in the background.
I have to tell you, the thing that struck me about, you know, and I agree, I'm glad they got off the ship, right? But the thing that struck me is it pretty much kind of looked like the ship, because obviously it's supposed to be a Starfleet base, right. So it kind of looks like the Starfleet design. You know, it's like now you get in a plane and you end up in another state, and you still end up eating at Cheesecake Factory. You know, it's that's exactly how it feels.
Well, the other part of this, too, I think, and I was thinking about this as I watched the opening, the effects for when the ship is going around the planet, they have not been altered from the original 1980 series, have they?
No.
I mean, we're still seeing what you saw back in 87, 88, right?
Yes.
Okay, because I mean,
I believe that, so, unless it's really subtle change.
I mean, because the planet effects are so great. Like, whatever they're doing to make that happen when they're flying around the planet, I always remember watching these on the first time around and going, wow, those are some really terrific effects. A planet looks so cool. It doesn't look like that, whatever they used to do, that kind of crystal ball effect that they would use in the original series. And even those were okay. Those were some of the best effects for the, you know, 60s. But but I don't know. It just is such a great looking planet. And then when you get down on it, it's like,
Yeah, you get there and it's like, oh, look, we.
Hey, fellas, get the set pieces out from Farpoint Station over here and a little bit of.
Well, you know, get that nice Bob Ross fella to paint us up a matte painting here of this, put a dome in it, because a dome is always the future. And, you know, it just looks like you've gone from Pasadena, California to Pasadena, Texas.
Right.
It's just, you know, it's still all just Pasadena. The first plot I want to talk about is the Picard inspection plot, because this is the surprise for them. They know they're taking Wesley to go get his test, his rabies shot or whatever he's getting. Here, out of nowhere, suddenly Picard's old buddy, Admiral Quinn. Hello, I'm Admiral Quinn. Who proves once again that as you get older in Starfleet, they kind of lay off the physical training. The PT is not nearly as demanding, because Admiral Quinn's been replicating a lot of high polysaturated fats. And that's cool. You know, God bless him. He probably was very nimble and active when he was younger.
You should have seen the way I could jump through the hoops back in the day, Picard. Now pass me the fry card, please.
Yeah, he's like, where's the fish fry card?
I'd like some hush puppies and some slaw.
Now, those Admiral outfits, by the way, are terrible, right? I mean, they're really poorly designed.
Yeah, and this is have we seen an Admiral so far? I know we see more, but this guy was...
Yeah, Admiral Jameson.
Okay, that's true. He was an admiral, wasn't he? But this guy, I think this guy is wearing Jameson's clothes, because Jameson was a slender young guy, right? This guy has just been poured into the suit. And I kind of feel like this Quinn is a representation of Gene Roddenberry in a way. Okay?
Really?
Yeah, I feel like when I saw Quinn stepping out of the, because he teleports up there with his Remick, younger guy, mm-hmm. right? And he just looks so silly in that outfit. He just looks like I just feel like they were kind of goofing on Roddenberry somehow. Because this guy, he has a very Roddenberry like demeanor to him. He's kind of gruff. He's kind of he's really big and stocky like Roddenberry was. And I don't know. I just wonder if behind the scenes this is kind of a goof on Roddenberry, because Roddenberry was out of the picture for this episode. He was on vacation.
Yes, he was sent away on vacation, right?
Yeah, he agreed to it, but the idea was, you know, I don't know exactly who got to him, and so the writer that steps in and kind of runs this episode ends up being the showrunner after Roddenberry, and Roddenberry kind of hands over the reins slowly but surely to him. But I think this episode is interesting because it's a big shift, and there's a lot of sort of anti-Roddenberry ideas in this one episode that are counter to a lot of the stuff that we've seen so far in the last 17 episodes.
So, for instance, you're talking about things like the fact that the something is up in Starfleet and the Federation, that the Federation is not this utopian perfect system.
Yeah, like we've talked about before, about it's so perfect and it's so holier than any other organization in the galaxy. And that was Roddenberry's ideal. And we've been talking about how that makes it hard to have drama in the show if there's no actual kind of infighting or a conspiracy or anything like that goes on in a real life government.
Yeah, I mean, that is a good point, because also there's a real sense of competition in Wesley's application. We're all supposed to be expecting that there is no competition. It's all about cooperation.
Right.
And as I believe you pointed out before, it's still strange that they have this idea of rank, that they're still moving up a chain, but they're not supposed to be competitive and there's not supposed to be any tension. When the episode itself starts off with tension between Wes and that kid, Jake, and Remick, I mean, Remick's a jerk.
And that's right away. Like, right, the episode actually begins with this tension. And Quinn and his right arm, Inquisitor.
Yes,
Inquisitor. Come on. And instantly, this guy is abrasive. And he's everything that Roddenberry has told us already that he doesn't want to have happen in Starfleet. You're going to have people questioning other people's motives. And then what happens is there's this trickle-down effect where then Riker begins to question Picard, because Picard won't give Riker all the information that he's supposed to give his number one.
Right.
And right. So you've got this sort of infighting, and it, you know, it's a little tension. It's nothing huge, but it's something mm-hmm. that Roddenberry has straight out said in interviews, and we've mentioned it many times before, that he doesn't want to have that kind of infighting. And I just think it's interesting that all of these things are kind of coming onto the show when Roddenberry's on a vacay.
It's the first part of a plot that doesn't get picked up for like five more episodes, right? Part two, in an episode called Conspiracy, is not for like five more episodes.
Right.
And that really kind of freaked me out a little bit, because I knew from previous viewings that this is how it worked, that there was that gap. But at the time, I don't remember thinking to myself, are these folks, like the guy who plays Quinn and the guy who plays Remick, were they just like hanging out in Burbank waiting for 5 weeks? Or did they shoot these things back to back or something like that?
All these guys, they knew they were going to bring them back, but they all live in L.A. anyways. They're all living in the valley somewhere waiting for their next gig. They're perfectly happy.
So they're all like hanging out at Fatburger waiting for, for like, Gene to call them up again. It's like, hey, come on over. We're doing part two.
I told you, if you do a good job, we might bring you back again. Yeah, from what I've seen, I think that they didn't know exactly what they were going to do with this the conspiracy idea, but I'm sure that they asked the two actors to be involved and come back, which is kind of cool. I mean, you don't know it when you're watching the episode the first time, but I remember watching the sequel episode and thinking, oh, wow, finally, we're going to have a continuation of story, and we're going to see some characters come back in that aren't your bridge crew. I mean, as I've noted before, it's the thing that bothered me when I originally watched these episodes, that I wanted there to be more of a continuation of the story. And of course, there is certainly a continuation of the character story and development. So I think since we see these characters over and over every week, there's this assumption that we don't need to run into some of the other characters again. It's nice when that does happen, because it feels like you're actually in a real world. Like, oh, there's Admiral.
Yeah.
There's sure, Admiral Quinn sure. again. There he is. He didn't die of a heart attack because of all those French fries. He's okay after all. Maybe next time they'll put a little jacket on him, like a little Picard dinner jacket.
Well, okay. So he's accompanied by Lieutenant Commander Dexter Remick, who, first of all the names to survive into the 24th century, Dexter. Dexter made it.
Jean-Luc made it. Why can't Dexter?
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. And my thing about Lieutenant Commander Dexter Remick, and I think I'm very witty for thinking this. I think I'm very clever.
Oh, wait, hold on. I feel like we need some special theme music for this.
Andrew's Clever Corner.
Andrew gets clever right now.
Ding. Andrew's so proud of himself for occasionally having what he thinks is a witty thought, but is actually a pretty tortured metaphor.
The buildup is killing me, number one.
You better strap in there, Johnny. That old Dexter here is the first STT&G's podcaster.
Oh, my God.
And this feels like it was about to become a clip show
right at
some point, because he starts calling back to these previous episodes.
It
I
does.
Kept thinking we were going to see some clips, but we didn't. But he absolutely does what we do. He reviews the episodes, and he calls out the weak spots.
It's basically when the shows run out of money, or somebody didn't show up that week, or I don't know, whatever happens behind the scenes. But for some reason, the show needs to get out an extra episode, and they don't have the budget to actually shoot an episode. So then they'll have two of the cast members sitting around and remembering. And then you'll have like flashbacks.
Or they'll have a season two episode where Riker has a fever.
Right.
And they're trying to cure him because of a writer's strike. They had to do a clip show.
That's right.
So, yeah.
We've got to give credit to the production here. I mean, this wasn't like a flashback clip show. It was actually a nicely cut sequence where Remick is grilling all of the Enterprise
He's grilling that Grinch grill.
I want to get back to them.
I'm
trying to come back to your point, because we went off. He's grilling the Enterprise bridge crew for crying out loud. And there's this great sequence where they're cutting. Yes. There's a shot of Remick.
Yes.
And then he's asking a question, and they jump cut to another character who gives an answer to the next question.
It was definitely some creative direction. I mean, it makes what could have been a really static scene really kind of enjoyable. It gives it some energy.
It does. It's nicely done, and you don't always see it on the show, but please go back to what you were saying about, I think you need to hit your
He's
point
sitting
again
in the
about,
cargo bay of old NCC-1701D on his on his mic with his MacBook, recording some of his clever observations about the show. And so, for instance, when he goes through the episode, okay, I'm even going to give you, I'm going to even pretend this is like a naturally occurring phenomena, and say, okay, yeah, it's like that time when he says he calls out the nepotism injustice where Picard violates the Prime Directive to save Wes. Or he talks about Picard's metal lamp when dealing with a stargazer. These are things that we were talking about, right? It's like, how do they keep letting Picard sneak off the goddamn ship to sneak into this stargazer? Or you know, how is this? If this is Crusher's son, of course they're going to save him.
Right. Injustice. He shirked his Prime Directive duties by saving Crusher on Justice Planet.
Right.
Did they say he was taken over by the unnamed space entity and went into the Picard cloud? Did he mention that one,
Only
too?
Only Among Us. No, I don't think and he mentioned that.
But he notes the time when they get the drunk disease that got onto the ship in episode two.
Right. Accidentally.
And the time they went down to the planet with all of the African-American people and how offensive that was to everybody.
No, oddly enough, they missed that one. Do you remember the part where you completely offended 97% of your audience?
Right. Remember the one, Captain, where you put together Data's cloned brother who had been taken apart and put in a box, and then he takes over the ship and almost kills everybody and shoots Beverly Crusher in the shoulder?
And you were totally cool with all of that?
Right. Well, all that happened. He's like, Jesus Christ, Picard. It's only been like 17 episodes. I mean, what else could go wrong?
Okay, so I've been counting. How many entities have you people met?
Yeah, and Q showed up here how many times?
And these uniforms reek. They absolutely reek.
17 episodes. Holy mackerel! Is that all? It smells like at least you're in season three by now.
But he does that thing too on the bridge when that kid Jake steals the shuttlecraft. He's like, why wasn't the shuttle bay secured? And that he said that I was thinking it exactly when he said it.
Remick says this.
How could that kid get to a shuttlecraft?
So the shuttlecraft gets stolen by this kid, and it's actually a good scene besides it needing to be locked down. So they don't lock the doors on anything in this place, right? Transporter room doesn't get locked. The bridge doesn't get locked. Captain's quarters doesn't get locked, so you can leave your Chinese finger trap in there for Data to play with. The shuttle bay doesn't get locked. None of this stuff, right? Holodecks, nope. It's a good scene, but what's funny is that the kid is stealing the shuttlecraft, and then he gets pulled in by the planet's gravity, and the shuttlecraft is going to crash, right? But Remick is up there, like, judging Picard at the same time going, what are you going to do now, Captain? Huh? Look what's happening. What are you going to do? And Picard's like, oh, Jesus Christ, shut up, Remick.
Do I come to where you work and criticize what you're doing?
Right. Quiet.
And you're sitting there making a space Big Mac. Do I sit there and say, put the cheese on first, dummy?
Let me form a complete sentence for crying out loud. You know what? I don't understand about my Picard. I don't think, and I'm working on it, okay? I just want to make sure everybody knows that. If anybody's jumped on this episode or last two, and I haven't noted that I'm working on the Picard, I'm working on it. What I love is, I keep saying, for crying out loud, and I think that is not something that Patrick Stewart probably says.
Picard ever said, no, he's rubbish!
But I love rubbish! Saying it. It sounds just like the most organic thing that he could say for some reason. I don't know. So this Remick's giving him a tough time, and Picard's trying to tell the kid on the ship how to not get pulled into the planet or how to aim the shuttle so it can bounce off of the atmosphere of the planet. And Remick just won't shut up until Picard actually saves the kid. It's tense, first of all, and then it's nice because it shows the captain, it shows him off in front of Remick, who's been giving him such a hard time.
Well, it's one of those scenes, too, though, that we see there a couple more as we go on where Picard does something that the bridge crew probably should know what he's doing, especially because they fly that gigantic-ass ship through space. But they all act like, what's going on? What could the captain be doing? He's saying to go towards the planet? The captain's gone crazy. Has he been taken over by another entity? And he's like, no, bounce it off the atmosphere, Jake. And they should know that. The guy flying the ship, Geordi, should go, oh, I know what he's doing.
But look, in his defense, Picard's defense, he's like, lock tractor beams on him. And they're like, no, he's too far for that. beam him out of there. Oh, no, he's out of range. It's like all the things that make, you know, that makes sense that you'd be able to do with this giant machine in outer space.
Right,
you can't do because somebody back there is like, Riker's looking at his script going, they told us it's too far. I mean,
it would have been great at that moment if Worf would have said, photon torpedoes armed, Captain. Phaser lock established, Captain.
Let me blow him out of the sky and give him a quick death.
He should meet death with his eyes open. Rubbish!
Yeah, that's not good.
So I also want to point out that Dexter...
He saves the kid.
He says, spoilers! that Dexter is played by this guy, Robert Schenken Jr. And here's something. This is a little fun fact for you folks, a little glimpse behind the scenes of SDTNGs. Now I'm really carefully looking at who these guest stars are, because last time we had Elizabeth Lindsay, who in Home Soil, who turned out to be a remarkably accomplished ethnographer and explorer. He had won awards from the United Nations.
People's Choice, too, I think.
And so now I just, like, pop off to the internet because you can find out everything about these people.
Right.
I'm like, okay, Admiral Quinn's got to be somebody. He looks familiar. Oh, okay, he's an actor. That's cool. So what about Remick? And then this dude turns out to have won a Pulitzer Prize.
I know.
Or a nine-act play.
What was the play called?
The Kentucky Cycle.
Right.
And then he also is going to win a Tony in 2014. But the point is, really? He's an accomplished playwright. You know, this episode's in 1988. 5 years later, this guy's going to win a Pulitzer Prize.
I know. That's pretty cool.
You know, we keep going about Sir Patrick Stewart, but that takes him like 20 years, right? This guy's showing up, eating up some scenery, winning a Pulitzer.
Yeah, I know. That's funny. It makes you wonder, you know, was he a regular actor? Or was he, you know, looking for gigs? Or like last time, our friend Louisa, what's her real name?
Elizabeth Lindsay.
I think wanted to be on the show. And later on, I think you'll find out that there's a very funny Mick Fleetwood wants to be on in one of the episodes in the future.
Right.
It's so ridiculous. I laugh because you get Mick Fleetwood on. He's a big Star Trek fan. He wants to be on the show and they put him in a giant fish suit. So yes. I'm really looking forward to that episode.
But also keep in mind, you have Whoopi Goldberg coming up here soon.
Yes.
I mean, it's not like...
No, and she wanted to be on the show. It's a big deal to her.
Yeah, this is someone, this guy... Schenken is like a huge deal outside of the show, and it's almost like he's on the show incidentally, and I just think it's great. But then you think to yourself, okay, then you get Whoopi Goldberg, then you get Mick Fleetwood, then you get Joe Piscopo. I mean,
you're forgetting Corbin Burnson.
That's true. And what about Armin Shimmerman?
Well, listen, for all those keeping track, the Shimmerman-mans of the world,
Shimmerman-mans, yes,
we've already had two Shim sightings. If you'll recall, early Ferengi, one of the first Ferengi, and a silver plate.
Yes, he plays the face on a box.
Right.
Which you got to admit, that's going to stand out in a resume. Hey, how many people here have played inanimate object? Am I right?
You're right. If I had the luck of being in that scene, I would put that on my business card. It's the size. It's like a rectangle. He was played this plate that was like kind of rectangular. So it's not a plate. It's like a steel plate. But I would put that on the front side of my business card and it would just make you turn it over and go like, what the heck is this guy? Who's he?
But I also have to say that Dexter, he's the best character in that episode. I mean, he really tears it up and he's totally memorable.
He's
got the perfect face. He's got that angry little bureaucrat face, he's a little guy.
He's a little guy. Leave him alone.
Well, you know what I mean? I mean, he's not an Admiral Quinn. Dexter's fierce, man.
He is, and by the way, those costumes do nobody any good because you know the guy that shouldn't be in the really tight one, and then you've got Dexter's a small dude, and it just makes him look really unimpressive.
He looks extra small.
It's not doing anybody any favors, and especially the guest stars, because as we've mentioned before, they go into wardrobe and have to pull one of these suits off of a rack and just find the one that fits.
Sure.
They're apparently not custom making anything for anybody that comes onto the show.
No, it's kind of like saying yes to the dress. You know, you go in, you see what models they have on the rack, and off you go. As we mentioned earlier, I mean, we're not having any confrontation on the show, and this guy just like confronts like crazy, and he gets Riker. I love what he does with Riker.
Riker gets so pissed. Well, Riker's pissed off from the very beginning because Quinn has a face-to-face with Picard and tells him that something's going on, is secretive. Right. Picard wants to bring number one into the meeting and he's not allowed to. And this instantly, of course, pisses number one off. And Picard wants to defend him and says, well, my number one needs to come with me. And Quinn just won't have
it. My number one! And then so Riker just has to stand there like a goof. And it's such a diss. It's such a burn.
Yeah.
It would be great if the transporter chief would have said, ooh, burn.
Yeah, he looks
not
so
such
rude.
A big shot now, are you?
Shut up, O'Brien. What's funny is that then there's a scene on the bridge after that. Riker again challenges Picard, wanting to know more information. And Picard says, I can't tell you. And Riker goes storming off like a big baby, right? And Remick wants to stop him and ask him questions. And Riker, you know, refuses and goes off into the elevator, right? I don't know if was there a commercial break. I'm not sure. But the very next scene that Riker shows up in, he's as happy as a clam. It's like, what happened in between these two scenes? And I'm like, did he go onto holodeck number 5 and meet up with Minuet again? Or did he check out his little dancing girls or something?
Yeah,
his
hologram harp players.
Time to blow off some steam, number one.
I mean, you got to give him credit. Kirk would never have done anything like that. He came back with a brand new attitude.
Which lasted about 10 seconds.
Right.
Because then he's such an adolescent. So he returns. He's all relaxed. Then Remick's like, can we go in your ready room? Yeah, sure. Go in there. And he just stands. I'm just going to stand there. And it's such a childish thing to do. Right. I mean, remember him like sticking his head up against the wall and, you know, when Deanna was getting married. It's just, I'm just going to stand here. Ask all the questions you want. I'm not sitting down.
Right.
And Remick's like, so?
You can stand there?
I'm not going to ask the questions. He can stand there all damn day long if he want to, pal.
Yeah, he said he's not going to ask any less questions if you stand there or not. Yeah.
I'm going to ask them even slower, Commander.
Is it true, Commander Riker, that you were a god 4 or 5 episodes ago and you haven't learned very much from them, have you? Like, remember all the bad crap that happened to him because of his impudent behavior? And here he is pouting.
Is it true you were trying to procure sexual favors for Lieutenant Worf while you were a god?
Is it true that you were having a three-way with Captain Picard with a hologram in the holodeck?
In the holodeck with Minuet and the candlestick.
In the holodeck!
I would bet money that this is also our first Riker chair straddle. When Remick says, you know, you can stand there all day if you want, dumbass.
Right.
Riker like straddles that chair. He does that thing that we've been talking about where he just swings his leg over the back of the chair and rubs his butt against it.
I mean, he's just getting going. There's some taller chairs later on, but I think this is the first time he does it. And it's kind of like a miniature chair, but it had a little pillow on the top of it where you're supposed to put your head. And he just runs it right over there. And he goes right over the top of it. That's the way Riker does it.
We have Remick to thank for this.
That's true. I wonder, do you think it was inspired by Remick? Do you think that Frakes is like, you know what? You know, I'm going to pull out the whole stepping over the chair thing here.
Yeah, how would you like a crotch full of Riker?
I did this in 7 Brides for 7 Brothers, all over the stage. They loved it.
The best part about Remick is after all this, after he has just made every enemy he possibly can.
Remick turns in his report to Quinn. After Picard demands that this interrogation stops, and Remick tells Picard that he would like to be reassigned to the Enterprise after his tour at Starfleet is over.
After his tour with the Inspector General's office is over, this is where I'd like to serve.
Because he's so impressed by the Enterprise crew and Picard that he wants to be on the ship. And the look that Patrick Stewart gives as Picard when he does that is just, it's so great. You almost think that he would want to play off of somebody else. Like you'd have Picard and Riker in that scene together.
Yeah.
But it works so much better with Picard. He doesn't even roll his eyes. It's just like, he's like, can you believe this guy? It's such a great response.
Can you believe? Would you like to hear the song I've come up with for Commander Riker? I've been saving it for just this episode.
Do it. Let's hear it.
I've been singing it in my head for months. You're going to love this one.
I love the way you spread your legs on what I put my hair on, Commander Riker. I love the way you take a chair on, Commander Riker. I love the way you spread your legs on what I put my hair on, Commander Riker.
Oh, it's the worst. It's so fucking awful.
I have to ask you a serious question. You put your legs on, what I put my head on. Commander,
I have to ask
Riker.
You a serious question as your friend, and I'm concerned about your health. Did your balls never drop? I mean, is that how you're able to hit that note?
Thank you. Sometimes you gotta go high to go low.
That's some good range, I gotta tell you. I like that guy, that Take On Me guy.
Right.
Take me on. So getting back to the podcast for a minute, I think we've done the inspection to death. I feel we've inspected that.
Let's go down to the planet Relva 7.
You know, again, you're a big Wesley fan. You had to be excited about this.
I am. You know, anytime you got a Wesley-centric episode, I'm there. I'm ready to defend my young crusher.
But you're not telling me that when you first saw this episode and you saw the title was Coming of Age, the first thing that happens is he's flirting with this Oleana girl. Right. Did you not think he was literally going to come of age?
Well, listen, I mean, no, because there's absolutely zero sex going on for this kid and almost anybody else in the show. So, no, I didn't know what it was going
to
be.
He's 16. He's just about to turn 16.
It's a good thing you're cute, Wesley, or you could be really obnoxious. That's what she says to him.
And that kind of flirty tension is what always leads to, whatever.
Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, I was really more distracted by the fact that you've got Wesley, you've got this fish dude.
Mordok. The Mordok.
Oh, I'm sorry. The Mordok? And you've got, look, first time, this is another Gene Roddenberry wasn't there for this. First time we see a Vulcan on the show.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So we've got our first Vulcan. She's a potential Starfleet student. And then you've got this other woman who's a Earth girl, I guess, right?
No, we don't. Yeah, we don't know what she is.
We don't know, but they don't. We're just making the assumption that she's some white person from Earth because they don't, you know, they don't call out where she's from or they call out everybody else, right? You've got these two guys and two girls, women, and they're all competing for one seat in Starfleet Academy from Revlon 5,
yes,
right?
For Ed Revlon 5, that's exactly correct.
Of course, the tension is only really between the two guys. You know, it's like, it's only these two guys can be smart enough to possibly get into Starfleet, and the women, I mean, even though the Vulcan is kind of pissed off that she's not competing at the same level that they are, it's like, come on, guys, let's mix it up a little bit and have the women do something here. It's again with this, And so she's just this kind of potential love interest for Wesley, who I don't believe she ever comes back again. She does some other movies.
Oleana?
And stuff.
No, Oleana. Yeah. Oleana disappeared.
And and the thing is, the actress is perfectly fine, and so is the Vulcan. But they don't give her a thing to do. And there's enough going on in this episode. You don't need. I mean, there's like 3,000 people on the ship. There's not one chick that Wesley can hook up with at any time. Isn't there anybody?
Your point is well made, because I actually had to make a special note of their names, that it's Oleana and Tashanik, because otherwise I would have said, you know, the girls.
Right.
Because they're so indistinct. And it is weird that they finally have a speaking role for a Vulcan, but she gets maybe three lines. I don't know why they chose a Vulcan for this. It's a significant choice, but are we supposed to think that Wesley's so smart that he can even, like, fly past the Vulcans?
Right, smarter than a Vulcan, eh? I think it's because Roddenberry wasn't there. Roddenberry specifically did not want Vulcans in at least his first season, and maybe not at all. And he has some quote where he's saying, the galaxy is full of all these alien races. Why do we need to run into Vulcans again? You know, he's gone. He's on vacation. They're like, hey, you know, it'd be funny, guys. Gene is going to be really pissed off when he gets back here and sees a Vulcan in this episode. I know it's cool to see a Vulcan again, but they've already done tons of callbacks already. So it's a weird thing that he was so specific about the certain callbacks that he wasn't willing to do, when almost every episode so far has been some sort of echo of the original series or a straight out return to something that we saw before. It's kind of a weird hang-up to not want to have Vulcans in it. So I am going to chalk it up to Gene being away. Okay,
you do that. I mean, that's your story. You're sticking with it. I think it's perfectly reasonable assumption. It makes about as much sense as some of the other choices. Mordok the Benzite is weird, too, because this is the exact same actor is going to use the exact same makeup and show up as the exactly different character, the other Benzite.
Oh, really?
And it's really kind of a shame. Because, yeah, he's going to be – there's that episode where Riker – is aboard a Klingon ship, and he spends time as it's sort of an exchange program, officer exchange program. There'll be another Benzite on the Enterprise at the time. I really liked the Benzite, and I was really kind of sad that there wasn't more Benzite action, because I liked the look. I mean, I liked the giant forehead catfish look. I liked the weird breathy thing.
Yeah, it's got
and then
like
he's got this weird pinkies, which is a strange thing to add. We're just gonna give him longer pinkies.
Right, I know. You know what would really make this guy look alien is he has really long pinky fingers.
Yeah. I mean, he looks like a cross between a catfish and a Frenchie. I got an idea. Let's give him some pinkies. That'll make him pop.
The gadget he's wearing around his neck is this, I guess, is some kind of breathing apparatus. Yes. So it's like it's kind of
it's an inhaler.
Yeah, and it's shooting stuff up into his face every once in a while so he can breathe. And it's kind of a cool idea. It's better than wearing a helmet around. He's not wearing this big old plastic
helmet. Yeah, and he's just not a brow. You know, he's not just like a wrinkled brow.
No,
he actually has like a full appliance going. And in this case, he looks nicely alien. I mean, there's, and he's got that strange, you know, sort of way of talking. And he seems interesting.
Yeah, he is. He is. And I think it would have been great if we had him. You know, Wesley's the friend of the dude that's going to crash his shuttle into the planet, right? Riley?
Jake.
But wouldn't it have been interesting if this was his pal on the ship instead? I mean, wouldn't that have been much more interesting to have him snowball fighting with this guy in the holodeck and stuff? I would like it. Mordock and Wesley,
attorneys at law.
It's a spinoff. That, you know, they're making all these Star Trek spinoffs. Why? Do you think anybody's pitched that one yet?
I have a structured settlement, but I need cash now. Call Mordock and Wesley. The insurance company said I was only entitled to $5,000. Mordock and Wesley got me gold-pressed latinum and my own shuttlecraft.
No tractor beam can catch this shuttlecraft.
Bounce it off the planet, pal. I guess I want to talk a little bit, too, about how dumb these tests are.
Again, with the competition, though, again, there's competition. So we've got this extreme competition between these four applicants, and only one of these four can make it. So they have these rigorous tests that they have to go, which I think is really anti kind of Starfleet, the way they've described it so
well. Far. And also, but why is there a limit to how many people you could take in the Starfleet?
That part I don't understand either, because they're saying like all of you guys are strong candidates and they only want the best of the best. So Wesley is, you know, some kind of space superhero. And if he's just slightly less as good as Mordock, isn't he good enough to go to Starfleet?
And doesn't Picard write him a rec letter? Doesn't Picard say, by the way, this creepy looking traveler dude came through here and he told me some shit about Wesley that'll blow your mind. You really want him to join the Academy.
I can't tell you about it, and don't ask his mother either. I want to get this creepy Cosby sweater wearing kid off my ship as soon as possible.
He's the Mozart of space, time, and propulsion. So, right. Mordock. I guess the Beethoven of space, time, and propulsion. He's the Handel of space, time, and propulsion. He's like, I ain't got no time for you. I got big pinkies.
We only take the cream of the crop here at Starfleet.
But we do get a nice instructor. We get Instructor Chang, played by Robert Ito, an Asian character. I was so deliriously happy.
I know. Well, and a positive portrayal. I mean, we've got an actual character who isn't doing something offensive or being like so background that it doesn't matter. He actually is a character with a real speaking part.
Well, let's skip over the how stupid the other tests are. Just trust us when we say they're stupid.
Yeah, one of them's like Tetris.
What's the ratio between matter and antimatter? It's 1-to-1, dumbass. Duh.
Oh, that's the one that always trips me up, that matter versus antimatter. Holy crap.
Didn't you read the classic Fantastic Four? Didn't you read the Fantastic Four? When they would go into the negative zone, and Reed always said, at the center of the negative zone is an antimatter planet. If we met a person from the antimatter planet, everything done for. Done for, Ben.
Boom. Boom.
That's almost an exact quote from Mr. Fantastic.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I get it. What issue was that?
That was Annual 6, actually. Fantastic Four Annual 6, the birth of Franklin Richards.
Oh, my God.
Stanley, Jack Kirby, Joe Sennett, all dead.
Right.
But let's talk about this psych test, because the psych test.
Okay.
So Wesley's all freaked out over the psych test because it's my worst fear.
Right.
This is where the episode finally starts doing some interesting character things. We have a very nice Worf moment in the holodeck.
We do.
Where he talks to Worf, and Worf does some sharing.
18 episodes into this thing, and you finally get an interesting scene for Michael Dorn to play. It's good. It's a good scene. Wesley's afraid to do this test, the psych test. Apparently, they psychologically scar you when you want to get into Starfleet. And so they do some kind of test that's going to challenge your greatest fear. There's a lot of subtext going on that I didn't really get until we actually get to the scene. But he doesn't tell us what his greatest fear is, but he's worried about facing something terrible. And it's funny because tension is so subverted on this show. I kept thinking, like, what's he going to do? They're not like, what's it going to be, snakes or right, an Aldebaran right. Cobra or something? Or like, what's going to happen?
Three-headed Aldebaran Cobra callback.
Right. Worf actually has some really great lines and talks about how he himself was afraid of the very same thing in his own Starfleet Academy test.
Yeah, Wes is like, I didn't think Klingons were afraid of anything.
Only fools have no fear.
Yeah, and you know, his fear, I think, is an interesting one. It's based on character. It's a fear of dependency, of having to depend on others because he is a Klingon. Wow, right. Okay. Because the tension that they've showed us before between Worf and the rest of the crew has been his pet Targ and his kinky sex habits. And yeah. Now, actually, we have something with some depth to it.
Well, right. And there's a scene where we haven't had a scene between the two of them. And here they are. And he's actually, you know, kind to Wesley. And I mean, it does so much for Worf's character. We've seen that's more character development than he's had in all, you know, the past 17 hours before this. I mean, it's really in one nice little scene. It's good.
And then Wes's greatest fear, of course, is leaving a person behind, leaving in this case, a man behind.
Never leave a man behind because why, number
one? Because Picard had to leave a man behind. Picard had to leave Jack Crusher, Wesley's right. Father, behind. That ended up with Jack Crusher dying, and Wesley was deeply afraid of having to make that same choice. Could he do it? That also makes sense. It's not just snakes or girls. It's something right. really deeply embedded in his character.
And there's some nice writing strokes with that in mind, because it's also foreshadowed before when Remick is grilling the crew and he grills Wesley Crusher's mom, Beverly Crusher, and asks how she can come to terms with the fact that Picard had basically killed her husband on another mission. And Crusher has a nice scene there. Beverly has one, I think just one scene in the whole thing, but it's a good scene. And she tells him to mind her own business, basically, which was great. But then I didn't expect that callback later on to that scene again. It was nicely written.
But I have to tell you, that's not Bev's only scene, because she gets to do this voiceover. Oh. And this is the part where I kind of went, yes, I kind of went screwy here with Wes on this. And it was strange that the episode started this way, because we actually end up having some sympathy for Wesley as it goes on. But that first scene where he runs into that kid, Jake, in the hallway, and Jake's right. all depressed because he can't get in. And Wesley's like, oh, don't be depressed. I'm sure you'll get your chance. And then Beverly is like, you know, Ensign Crusher, you're needed. And it's like, Ensign Crusher, okay, right. Oh, remember? Because your mom knows Captain Picard, they made you an ensign. Remember that? Remember that?
Wesley, your mom's calling.
Yeah, hey. And then he calls her doctor. He goes, on my way, doctor. Because right, he's like, right. I can't he does call that, her mom. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, by the way, my mom's ship's doctor. And, you know, she's got the hots for Captain Picard. They're really close. And he killed my father. So I'm going to go ahead and test. Sorry you didn't make it, Jake.
Everybody knows, Wesley. Everybody on this ship knows.
There's like some ensign working really, really hard to get on the bridge. And then they're just like, yeah, we'll just make this kid an ensign. Stick him up there.
Well, but think about that all those people on that ship had to go through this rigorous Starfleet Academy training, just like Wesley is, right? And then they do all of that. They're all so exceptional that they get into this program, right? And then they have these jobs where somebody's cleaning the plates in the mess hall and somebody's scrubbing out the, you know, sewer filtration system down below decks. And
someone's wiping off the back of the chairs after Riker's been there.
Right.
Don't forget this one. Don't forget the one with the low back. That's where I take my tea. He gets all over these things.
He loves sitting in that one. That's a favorite.
Excuse me, Commander. Please point out all of the chairs to the support staff that you swung your leg over this episode.
That one. That
I
one.
I would do it myself, but I need to go hang out with Wesley.
That one. That one. That one. Okay.
So when Jake steals that shellcraft, we're supposed to think, mm-hmm. God, Jake, you're out of control. But it's so clear right. the fix is in. There's no future for Jake on that ship.
Right. What's right? he
Jake's
do?
Not getting into Starfleet. Yeah. If Wesley can't get in, Jake's not getting in. He's like, I'm taking the shuttlecraft and I'm getting out of here.
Well, he doesn't even know how to escape in a shuttlecraft. The guy was going to last 5 seconds in space if it wasn't for Picard.
He doesn't know how to mix his matter and his antimatter, right. so he wouldn't have passed that test below anyway. I mean, I want you to know I hated Jake. All right. When he was like taken off of that shuttlecraft, I'm like, I don't blame you. Make your own way, because it's the fix is in on the Enterprise, pal.
It's such a big deal to have Wesley as this teenager in the cast. I'm sure that would be cool if you were that age watching the show. It'd be kind of fun. But what about all the other kids? It does make you beg the question about the rest of the crew and who all these other people are on the ship and how totally insignificant and kind of faceless and voiceless they
are. That situation with Jake also creates that weird Picard as a father dynamic, because Jake is supposedly like really freaked out and he's like, tell my dad this, tell my dad that. And unlike the When the Bow Breaks,
you can tell him yourself.
Yeah, unlike When the Bow Breaks, where we saw Harry's dad and these other parents, we never see Jake's dad. Picard right. becomes essentially Jake's dad.
That's true. We're definitely creating that. Paternal Picard.
Why does he have to be the commandant of the academy? Why commandant? Don't they have, can't he just be like the dean or something?
So the Quinn is trying to get him to accept this position as commandant of the academy. And he yes. offers this to Picard at the end of the episode when he finds that Picard's a loyal friend, I guess. And he wants to put him in this position for, I'm hoping that we find out exactly why later on. I'm not sure it's that clear, but there's a conspiracy in the Federation. Something's going on behind the scenes, and Quinn wants to position Picard in this other role. And so Picard has to think about it for part of the episode, whether he wants to give up his command and go be a commandant.
I can't even believe Picard was thinking about it, because essentially they're saying, do you want to continue to travel the universe in a galaxy-class starship, or do you want to become a college administrator? Right? Because that's basically what he would be, right? He'd be sitting behind a desk somewhere figuring out enrollment figures or something, you know, figuring out, well, I don't know, if you actually qualify for the Starfleet Pell Grant, you're on academic disqualification there, Quadrock.
It makes no sense, yeah.
No, it makes no sense at all. Why would he even consider that? It's like if you were going to take Picard and say, you know, we're going to put you in charge of the battle fleet, or we're going to put you in charge of Starfleet Bald Adventurers Club. But to sit there and say, you know, hey, we'd kind of like you to be the bursar. We'd like you to be the dean.
I'll take the position if Crusher can be my secretary.
Ooh la la. And I thought he hated kids.
Now he's learned to love them in the last few episodes. It's been a year almost, so maybe he's turned around. This is the thing. I mean, this is another corrective issue in this episode. I mean, he's very, very paternal, and we've seen signs of it so far.
It was 2 episodes ago he was all freaked out by that little girl, and maybe that's it.
I know. But she hugged him.
He's all freaked out by them, and now we're supposed to think he wants to go run a school. Like, he wants to become the intergalactic Mrs. Garrett, right? And teach these kids the facts of life. I mean, I don't buy it.
Where's Tootie? Where's Tootie when you need her?
Where's Space Tootie?
Excuse me, Tootie. Gene, I don't want to be too critical, but this whole Picard hates kids thing is just not going to last. It's just not going to stick. What are we going to do about that?
I know. We'll put him in charge of a school, and then gradually over the seasons, he'll soften and become a warm, paternal figure, just like me. Caw! Caw!
That just never gets old for you, does it?
Oh, I love it.
And maybe one listener think that that's the best.
Hey, you know what? You know what else about this episode that I love? Ferengi free.
Ferengi free. Now in a mouthwash.
Now in a laxative.
Well, mouthwash, laxative is one way or another.
Anything else, Mr. Roddenberry?
Well, next time we're going to have a Klingon episode. Klingon episode.
Don't ruin it, Mr. Roddenberry. Don't ruin it.
Caw, caw, Klingons.
Yeah, we're going to have some Klingons next time, dude.
I know we've got a few rewatchers hanging in there with us, but you just ruined it. You blew it, Andrew.
I feel terrible now. We're making the run towards the end, right? We have 6 more episodes to go before we get through the end of season 1. And I would say 5 out of 6 of them, there's a lot going on. There's some action happening.
We're doing a million-yard dash.
Let's go ahead and close up this shuttle bay.
Oh, we're closing the doors on this one?
Well, don't you think? No? You want to...
Yeah, sure.
We've gone for...
I'm just messing with you, number 1. Let's get the hell out of here.
Okay. This is the delightful Admiral Andrew with my close personal friend...
Commander Dave E. Dave.
Signing off till next time. Thanks, everyone.
Wait, let me do it 1 more time, okay?
I like the way you spread your legs on what I put my head on, Commander Riker. I like the way you rub your butt on what I put my hair on, Commander Riker.
Let's go mind the store.
Remember the end of Grease where they're all dancing and shit at the end of the school year? Yeah, this isn't that. It's all about Klingons.
And Klingons do not take hostages. You know, they would just talk.
Hey, we ain't fooling. Next episode is Klingon heavy.
They're going to rip off the Enterprise and go around the galaxy and act like what they think proper Klingon should be doing, which is like causing mayhem and panic all over the galaxy.
They're going to cry havoc and let slip the dogs of war.
We go old Darwin Klingon style. Or is it Klarwin or Garwin? Whatever.
They didn't have big ridges on their foreheads.
Right!
But they didn't say things like, I do not understand.
Hey, we're serious about this. It's all Klingon.
Admiral Kirk, give me Genesis!
You killed my son.
Andrew and Dave talk about the Klingon death ritual.
Well, we open someone's eyes while they're dying. Seems a little creepy to me.
This is the first time the Klingon death ritual has been witnessed on a Starfleet ship.
And we've got the horn for Dorn.
Mr. Dorn does a pretty damn good job as Worf.
Yeah, I gotta give Dorn some credit. You know, he really has owned this character.
Tune in to STTNG's Not Another Star Trek podcast for Full Frontal Klingon.
One planet over, dummy!